Okay. Hello,
Excellent.
Ollie. How are you doing?
Excellent. How are we?
Good. Good to see you, brother.
Ollie,
Hey, hang
good to
on.
see all of you again as well.
Yes. Sorry, it's like this is the writers are on strike, kids are out of school, totally
Oh.
unshaven, on like
Don't worry about it. I've still got another 3 weeks teaching until our summer holidays, but we make up for it later on in the year with we have different holidays than Americans. We have bigger Christmas and Easter holidays, so it's all good.
It all evens out, right? Enough time. Yeah, I was saying, like, 12-year-old and the 4-year-old and the 16-year-old all have very different like ideas of what's a good day here.
As long as you can keep busy with your writing, because I must admit that duck and cover, I think you're onto something there, fellas. I
Thank
really
you.
think you are. I read it last night in preparation today. I was blown away. You've got this idea of post-World War America that just doesn't sit with anything America at the time would want. I mean, you sarcastically refer to it as the good old days, and it certainly blows the doors off what was expected. It certainly feels more like the Montgomery bus strikes of the era, and it certainly feels like a very, very, very tense opener before it goes completely sideways. So I suppose let's start at the beginning with the three main characters. You've got Dell, you've got Ollie, which is always a good name for a character,
Right.
and you've got Jackson. Let's start there. Let's start about the setup for the book before we even go anywhere near Raphael, your concepts, how you're approaching this issue, and maybe how you'll be approaching different issues with different styles taking over. The
Yeah,
character
that's
plays.
great. Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just saying that. No, you go ahead because these. I mean the characters look came from Scott at first, and then we started to, flesh it out until we find, the right visuals.
Yeah, I mean, again, like the concept of the whole thing really came from talks that Raphael and I had 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, we've been thinking about this idea for a long time, and I think the reason that we decided to do it now was because of some of the stuff you're saying, where, we love the 1950s, I think, for its all of the kind of strange cultural invention of that time. But I think that invention also came from people being daring and pushing against an extremely paranoid and conservative and regressive kind of cultural moment, And I think both Brazil and the States feel like they're in a similar moment of kind of looking backwards, trying to sort of encourage young people in particular not to express themselves in the ways that feel true to them. And I think it felt like doing a story that was about a group of kids who essentially are living at a moment when they themselves are sometimes systemically stopped from doing things because of their race or their, but also they're prevented from even hanging out, and then are brought together by this kind of catastrophe that essentially is engendered by the previous generation's kind of fears and paranoia and I think predilection for conflict felt right. It's about young people realizing that you don't need to follow the structures that were set before you, and instead to break the rules of everything, of storytelling, of expectation, and all of that. And that's why it's kind of we decided to do it with these different genres. So the first issue is melodrama, the next one is horror, the next one is sci-fi, and the final one is Western. It's like a standoff. And the idea is that in the 50s, those genres really were powerful tools for commenting and critiquing and exploring that moment. I think that's why they were so resonant. They had horror as the fear of, mutations and all
Yeah.
stuff, and sci-fi as invasion and all of it. And so once those storytelling structures don't feel right anymore, the idea is to make something crazy and your own and brand new, which is why the story starts with that baby head dinosaur film. And so it's one of those books that's just a joy to write, I think, because Raphael and I know very strongly what it's about.
Right.
And so that allows for a lot of kind of zaniness and creative freedom, because you know that you have something you're saying with it. And in that way, it becomes more and more sort of elastic and fun for being able to kind of go anywhere you want.
And Raphael, one of the questions was about what whether we were going to get a different focus on each issue. So how are you going to approach the artwork, having done a whole gamut of different styles of artwork, whether it was on Batman, American Vampire, or even this? It does read like a contemporary comic, as you said, Scott, with all of those contemporary ideas, but set in the era of American graffiti. And like you say, paranoia, but in this case, they're right to be paranoid.
yeah, there's an excuse for that. And I think since we have each one of the issues are like pays a homage in a way to genre, we try to fit that into storytelling and narrative composition and try to, you know, bring this element into every one of the issues differently. Although, of course, there's like this consistency where you find during the whole series, but there are hints of, for example, the second issue, horror, it's much darker, and we try to go much, you know, trying to pay homage to the visuals of those kind of movies. Same thing with sci-fi, same thing with melodrama. It's there are hints of these aesthetics into those into every one of the issues.
And did you find, I mean, with something like horror, I dare say you're a dab hand at it. Were there any issues with sort of sourcing the 50s? Because it does feel very much like the 50s. You've got the vehicles, you've got the drive-in cinemas, you've got the clothes that they're wearing, even down, I dare say, to the glasses that Del has to wear. it does feel like you're having great fun with this comic. I mean, this is a question to both of you. Where did you find the fun the most? Where did you really grab it by the balls, if you like, and just sink your teeth in?
Well, I mean, storytelling wise, the 50s are like an era. If you notice in American Vampire, we actually spend, I think, the most time in the 50s, the 40s and the 50s. I love that era for all those reasons. I think that series is very much about, you know, looking at American culture and finding the sort of most heroic and monstrous things all at once. And the 50s sort of rings a lot of that. It has some of the most, I think, frightening tendencies from McCarthyism and sort of pushback against any kind of progress with race and gender and all kinds of stuff. Mm. And yet at the same time, it has these incredible moments of invention and daring and human bravery all throughout. And so those moments to me are always really fascinating. And the things they make at those times, the forms of storytelling and music and all of it really fascinate me. So in terms of the aesthetic, it was fun. Raphael and I went back and forth about like the clothes and the cars, and all of it comes to a head later too, when the kids kind of, you know, team up and you get like your full on kind of post-apocalyptic 1950s, 1950s team up.
Yeah, they definitely should be like unique and very recognizable, but they also had to echo what was going on at the time. So we spent quite some time finding references and, you know, trying to get their style very unique. And, you know, I'm very happy with that.
I love the fact that you do pack so much into that first issue. Scott, I've spoken to you about your dense prose that you bring to every comic anyway. And certainly I feel between the artwork that realizes the world and the stories we get, these characters fully formed, even it almost feels like some of them have gone through a hero's quest before, you know, the worst thing that could happen to America actually happens. You both must feel proud with, and I know it's always hard to talk to artists and creators about sort of critiquing their own work, but you must feel proud about how that comic's come out. I mean, like I said, I've read a lot of your stuff, both of you, but this, as I said, it feels like you're really onto something with this series, really onto something. I think it's really going to capture the imagination of the comic book read. It's certainly a comic I would advise non-comic readers to read.
Uh-huh. Thank you. I mean, again, like there's a certain magic that happens, like working with Raphael on my end, like we know each other so well. He's one of my best friends, and you know, I've worked with him longer than anyone in all of comics. Like, and we've been, you know, friends through a lot of personal ups and downs. And I think the thing that I always gravitate towards with him, with other people, you'll see me work with a lot, but with Raphael in particular, is like a few things. But one, he always wants to challenge himself creatively. I love that. I'm inspired by his whole journey in comics and what he's doing with his career. Also, like, he always wants to do something that matters to him at that moment. Neither of us believe in the idea of kind of escapist fiction or doing things just, you know, the idea is to dive into those things that feel appropriate at that moment. And then thirdly, like, we've been working together so long at this point, we trust each other to really sort of give each other enough room to kind of explore. So the fun with this comic in particular is, like, we really know what it's about. Again, like, it's about these kids that have to learn in a way that to throw off kind of the whole broken mantle of their previous generation's expectations and fears and everything, and become their own people in this crazy cataclysmic thing. And you'll learn as it goes, like, the whole, you know, as it gets into the horror and sci-fi issues, like, why the desks worked, and are these really Russians or something even more nefarious, and so on. And is there something happening all over the world? And it gets, you know, that. But with Best Jacket, you know, each book was really fun to try out a different genre. I was saying before to other people that throughout my whole time at DC, you know, I always fought to get like a carve out for my exclusive, and then I never used it because I never had the time. And so coming out, I wanted to try all these different genres, and each book is really diving into one in a way that I'm deeply proud of, with a creator that, you know, challenges me. But with this book, the fun of it being the final book of that first wave of eight books is that it takes everything and mashes it together and says, make something new. It's about taking all the different genres, spinning them around when the time's appropriate, and saying, maybe these don't work as well as they were. Let's make something completely insane and appropriate for this moment. And so it's such a joy to work on this one with Rafa. It really is. Like, and it feels like I look forward to going to work on it, you know, and it's just like, I get to work on this one today. So it's a blast. And I really love what it's about. I love everything about it. And it's this constant surprise, because it's like, I'll write a very loose script for him, and we've already gone over it on the phone and talked about what it's about and the issue and the characters. And then he'll come back with this amazing artwork, and then I'll adjust the way that I'm writing the narration to really be appropriate for that. And so it's this constant improvisation, even though you know very strongly what the song is about or what you're trying to say through the music. It's like this, you know, counterpoint, and it works great. I love it. It's one of my favorite collaborations ever.
Yeah, it's pretty much like a jam. As Scott was saying, it's very nice to collaborate with him, because we know each other for so long, and we trust each other's instincts so much that it can be maybe easier for him, because he doesn't have to do like a full script, or the same way as he works with other artists, I think. And same way I feel like I'm the owner of my own thing. I'm not there to, you know, attend expectations of a publisher. It's just our thing, and we need to be happy and do the thing the best way as we think. And this is very brings a lot of freedom, you know. It's liberating.
Yeah. So I suppose, as such long-standing friends and family now, does that both give you the confidence to be very open about, no, I think this works, and maybe we should work it that way as well? And both being such good friends, able to take on board what the other person's saying.
100%. I mean, I can't speak enough to Raphael's contributions to the story, in addition to the art, where, like, all kinds of things that I don't want to give away spoilers, but like,
no,
the nature of the invasion itself and the aesthetic of the things that are behind the Russian attack and all of this stuff. I had one idea that, like, tied to the idea of, like, turtles and this stuff from the thing. And then he had a better idea that really upended the whole mythology. And I was like, that's so much better. And then that, you know, and we figure that stuff out before we start the issue and before we go, and then we go, and then there are little surprises along the way too. But yeah, it's we it's really one of the fun things is like finding people where it's never about ego. It's about like who has the best idea for the story. And
right.
Usually it's the collaborator. I you know, it's nice as a writer, like you get the credit until you say, no, it was them. But it really is like he's a powerhouse with it. And the series is, you know, is easily both of us, but, you know, I would give him more credit than me for a ton of the stuff that you like.
So we're not going to get any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in this issue then, are we?
No, the turtles, but we changed it. So the team mascot for they only referenced really briefly in the first issue, but the team, the Shellville team, because it's the Shellville, is the snapping turtle. And so it has a significance later when they go up against the team they were going up against is called the Krakens. That was the big team that was coming. And so there are monsters and things coming that reference that too. So there's it gets really out of control, but I think the fun thing is it's not just for the sake of being crazy. It's a story about, you know, having to kind of create new genres and mix things up and find a new way of kind of telling stories when the old ways aren't working anymore in some way. So,
yeah. And I'm aware of the time. I also like the humor that you add in it. The fact that Duck and Cover does refer to the fact that they saved themselves from the inevitable by literally following that advice as well. Are there other little jokes like that in the series to keep people not? Because honestly, I felt really tense reading that first, and also angry at some of the things that happened to Del, and particularly with Ollie as well. I don't think I felt that way reading a comic for a long while.
We were always pretty transparent about those things in American Vampire, and you know, we were always open to criticism for it. But I think that it's important to not, you know, if you're going to do the 50s or it's going to be in the 50s, to make it the 50s. And the 50s are a really ugly time in a lot of ways. So to be, you know, blunt about that. But yeah, there's a lot of, for all of the, again, like my favorite thing about that era is for all of the really dark and some of the darkest things in, you know, American 20th century history, you know, it happened in the 50s. But that said, there are all these moments of hope, like wild, wondrous, crazy invention, and also very brave, you know, real brave heroism, all kinds of stuff. And so there is a lot of humor. I think in the second issue, you'll see more as they try and figure out what is happening and what happens to Pug and how he comes back and all these different things. Like, I think it ups its level of like every issue becomes more and more, I think, out of control in a fun way. So very excited to see what people think. You know, it was hard not to give away more and more in issue one, but we really wanted to be like, this is predominantly a melodrama. The next one, now that you know all the characters and all their kind of repressed emotions, or most of them, the next one, we can kind of dive into the darkness of the scenario and monsters. And then in the third one, you get the whole truth of what's going on in the sci-fi. And then the Western is the big standoff between everybody.
So. I can't wait. And it's out. First issue is the 11th of July, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. And that's out on Comixology Originals. Obviously, a member, someone like me can get to read it for free. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great summer read. And I look forward to every single issue dropping, gentlemen.
Thank you so much, Ollie. It's nice to talk to you too. I miss your face. It's nice to see you.
Well, I know you had a good time at Thought Bubble. Raphael, I know you had a good time. I hope to see you at another Thought Bubble soon, whenever that may be. And I hope you both have a great summer as well. So I don't want to take up any more of your time because I know you've already shifted things around to be able to speak to me today. And I really, really appreciate that. It's always wonderful talking to you. And Raphael, it was great speaking to you for the first time as well. I've interviewed you in the past on email, but I only caught up with you very briefly at Thought Bubble. So it's great to speak to you all face to face, even if we're in different parts of the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Very, very nice talking to you as well.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, take care, Ollie. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you all. Bye.
Thank you, Pamela.